everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Annals of the Rheumatic Diseases podcast. My name is Laura Andreoli, and I am a social media advisor for ARD and R&D Open, and associate professor of rheumatology at the University of Brescia in Italy. Today, I'm here with Professor Dimitrios Boumpas and Dr. Antonis Fanouriakis from the Rheumatology and Clinical Immunology Unit at the Aptikon University Hospital, affiliated to the National and Kapodistrian University of Athens in Greece. They are the leading authors of the paper EULAR Recommendations for the Management of Systemic Lupus Erythematosus 2023 Update, which was published online first in the Annals of the Rheumatic Diseases in October 2023. The full text article is available on the ARD website, and a link to it can be found in the description of this podcast. Dimitrios, Antonis, welcome to this podcast, and thank you very much for sharing the results of your research with our community. I think we can start off by letting you introduce yourselves and tell us about your research interests.
Thank you, Laura. We're delighted to be part of this podcast, and thank you for selecting Lupus. This facilitates the dissemination of our work, and we do appreciate that, both on behalf of the investigators, but also the patients with lupus. I am an internist and a rheumatologist by training. My research interests include lupus, both the pathogenesis and the treatment. And since I repatriated from America to Greece, I have been leading the efforts for the EULAR recommendations on lupus.
And thank you very much for the invitation, Laura. I am Antonis Fanouriakis. I am an assistant professor of rheumatology in the University of Athens. And I've been working a lot of years together with Dr. Boumpas in lupus. And my main interest is in clinical aspects of the disease.
Great. Thank you for being here. So let's start off by saying that the EULAR recommendations for the management of lupus have become a reference document for healthcare professionals since they were established back in 2008. Dimitrios, you were the leader of this task force since the very beginning. Would you tell us about the main goals of this guidance and its evolution over time?
Yes, Laura. This started in Europe, and it started for a good reason. It was a good lupus community in European countries. And also there were people that they didn't have strong opinions. They were willing to talk to each other. And that made our life much easier, and that has facilitated this effort. These recommendations also have involved leading lupus investigators from all over the world. And the main reason behind that was that lupus is being cared by multiple disciplines, and we felt that there was a way to homogenize the care of lupus patients and set up basic principles, and eventually hoping that this the average care that the lupus patient will receive will improve. And we have seen signs over the years that, as you said, that this is actually has been achieved.
The overarching principles are one of the highlights of every EULAR recommendation paper. There are several keywords like individualized management, patient education, shared decision-making, adherence to treatment, among many others that are important to healthcare professionals. Antonis, would you briefly comment on how these principles can become part of the routine management of people living with lupus, and which are the possible challenges to their implementation?
Thank you for the question, Laura. As you know, and as you stated, all these aspects of lupus care, which include the role of patients like shared decision making and patient education, are things that EULAR places a lot of importance on, because they ultimately lead to patient empowerment and involvement in decisions that have to do with their disease. What is important, and in order to implement them in clinical practice, I think this is easier to do in centers that have expertise in the disease, so dedicated lupus clinics or expert referral centers, but also in settings where expertise in the disease is not, let's say, so strong. I think it all boils down to the fact that patients with lupus need time with their physician. I think protected time during patient interview is very important in order to inform our patients on a very complex and challenging disease, and also allow them to take time to express their own concerns and feelings regarding their treatment, their symptoms, and anything that could actually interfere with their daily activities. I think it's easier to say than to do, I admit this, but in the end of the day, I think that lupus is not the simplest disease to tackle, and appropriate and sufficient time during the communication between physician and patient is of utmost importance. And I think in this regard also, health professionals like specialist nurses in systemic lupus can also facilitate very much the communication between doctors and patients.
Great, thanks for the overview. Now, I'd like Dimitrios to comment on the 13 statements of the recommendations. So what are the key messages in a nutshell?
Yeah, in the first statement, involves hydroxychloroquine. It's the first line of therapy, and the target dose is 5 mg per kilogram. There is a risk for flare and retinal toxicity. Risk of flare is if you discontinue hydroxychloroquine, and the retinal toxicity has been underestimated in the past, and that's why we have set up the target dose to 5 mg a kilogram, and you need neuro techniques to monitor. For the second statement, refers to chronic glucocorticoid use. The maintenance dose of steroids should be less than 5 mg per day. In the previous statement, it was 7.5, but there are data suggesting that it would be best to lower this dose. And use these steroids only as bridging therapy, if possible, and also use IV methylprednisolone to make sure that you decrease the daily steroids. The third statement is the early introduction of the glucocorticoid sparing strategies. You don't have to wait too long before you introduce these disease-modifying drugs such as methotrexate, azathioprine, MMF, cyclosporine, and so on. The early introduction allows you to minimize the dose of the steroids. In the fourth statement, we have demonized the intravenous cyclophosphamide. This has been a drug that has saved lives in very severe lupus, and we felt that we should make a strong statement that for patients with severe disease, IV cyclophosphamide or rituximab can be used. The rituximab only refractory cases. In the fifth statement, we talk about the skin disease, that the biologics help, and the most of the experience is involves anifrolumab, and the experience is better, as Antonis will tell you. For a neuropsychiatric disease, nothing has been changed. You do the routine things for everybody, like you do for a patient without lupus, and you use either anticoagulation or immunosuppressive therapy, or a combination of both, if it's not clear what's the underlying pathology. The seventh statement is that for hematological disease, there are data with MMF that is good for immunothrombocytopenia, and therefore has they have a more prominent place now in the management of lupus with hematological disease. The eight is active nephritis initial therapy. It's you may use either MMF or the Eurolupus cyclophosphamide regimen. And you may add belimumab from the beginning or CNIs, and we discuss in other statements when you do this. The statement number nine is the subsequent therapy after the initial therapy in lupus. You do you continue belimumab and you continue MMF, or the CNIs, well, a bit caution for the long-term use. That number 10, intravenous cyclophosphamide, should be considered for patients with lupus at high risk for renal failure, and these are young patients with a lot of activity and chronicity at baseline. And getting to the end, statement 11, the tapering of immunosuppressive glucocorticoids in lupus nephritis is an important issue. We taper the steroids first, and then and you do not discontinue them abruptly. So steroids first and then immunosuppressive therapy. Statement number 12, antiphospholipid antibodies, nothing changes. Nothing has changed there. And the final statement is statement 13, which deals with immunizations and adjunct therapy. Here, in addition to all the vaccines, we talked about the renoprotective agents, and also in the discussion we discussed the role of potential role of the new kids in the block, the SGPL2 inhibitors. This is in the nutshell. So the most important point is early diagnosis, early introduction of therapy. Biologics may be introduced from the beginning to allow the minimization of the steroid use, and immunosuppressive therapy, you don't discontinue that unless you have completed at least 3 years. You don't have to discontinue 3 years, but at least 3 years. Most patients receive more than 5 years. And the other things that we discussed.
Thank you very much, Dimitrios. And Antonis, now I would like to ask you an overview about the treatment of non-renal lupus. What is new since the last update in 2019?
Well, if one wants to be honest, then I would have to say that in the field of extrarenal disease, not much progress has been made in terms of individual, let's say, manifestations like skin disease, hematologic disease, neuropsychiatric disease, or joint disease, as also Dr. Boubas alluded to in the statements. But if I wanted to mention the most important, of course, advances from 2019, this is, of course, the approval of a second biologic drug in systemic lupus erythematosus, which is anifrolumab, and which is now placed in the same position as belimumab in the treatment of, let's say, refractory systemic lupus erythematosus, extrarenal disease. But when we say refractory, and this is the second point that I would like to make in terms of extrarenal disease, this means that patients are candidates for either anifrolumab or belimumab without having prior to have failed in one or more conventional immunosuppressive drugs like methotrexate, azathioprine, or mycophenolate. In other words, the 2023 EULAR recommendations for the management of lupus and discussing specifically extrarenal disease advocate for an early use of immunosuppressive medications in lupus beyond hydroxychloroquine and glucocorticoids, and this includes both synthetic drugs and or biologic drugs, be that anifrolumab or belimumab, depending on individual patient characteristics.
So let's turn now to the important novelties in the treatment of lupus nephritis. Dimitrios, can you please summarize them?
Yeah, it's for the first time, a drug that we used was 2 weeks, like belimumab initially, based on the way we were measuring the response to therapy, turned out to be a very strong drug, very good results in as an adjunct therapy on top of standard of care for lupus nephritis. So the, finally, we have, after so many years, we have drugs that work in nephritis. In the previous decade, we had the MMF. Now we have the belimumab and also the calcium urine inhibitors. They are good quality data suggesting that they work. I'm optimistic that the anifrolumab data may also show some efficacy in lupus nephritis, but this is to be determined.
Another important output of the task force was the research agenda. Antonis, would you briefly tell us which topics shall be considered as research priorities?
Yes, so there was an extensive research agenda discussed during the task force meetings, but also outlined in the manuscript. First of all, we need to formally address the issue of early use of biologic drugs by probably designing good quality trials with the early use of biologic drugs versus immunosuppressives, one. Another thing, of course, is the fact that we need to better understand which patients are candidates for an early combination treatment in lupus nephritis. This is also considered very important. If the latter are not, if the combination therapies are not used in the, from the beginning in all patients, we should be able to identify which patients are the best candidates for this. A third thing, of course, is a chronic problem in lupus having to do with the outcomes of clinical trials for the approval of new drugs. And the community knows that several drugs probably have failed their trials, not because they were not effective, but because it was a matter of design. So again, a better design of clinical trials. And as you know, there are now ongoing initiatives to define probably better outcome measures for clinical trials in lupus, and possibly even also the adoption and wider use of organ-specific outcome measures in lupus, for example, skin measures, joint measures, etc. And as a final, let's say, research point, I would highlight, of course, the holy grail of every treatment in autoimmune diseases, issues that have to do with personalized treatment, meaning whether we will be able to find biomarkers for baseline identification of which patient will respond to one drug over the other, belimumab, anifrolumab, or even to newer drugs that will come and join our armamentarium in the future.
Very insightful. Thank you, Antonis. So, Dimitrios, you've gained a long-standing expertise in the management of systemic lupus erythematosus. Would you like to add something at the end of our podcast on how you envision the future of lupus?
The future is now. It's early diagnosis and early treatment is essential. You don't have to worry for the classification criteria to make the diagnosis to start the therapy. So this is, it's as simple as that, but this needs to be done more and more. The steroids save lives, but at the expense of excessive collateral damage, and took as many years with biologics. Now finally, we're at the position to dream of a steroid-free regimen, or to use a minimum steroids and to decrease the damage and decrease disease activity. And a final thing is something else from the present, but extends to the future. You cannot have a future in lupus unless you measure disease activity and damage and audit the quality of the care by the quality indicators that the EULAR has introduced. So there are some steps that we have to do now that we have more powerful drugs that will allow us to enable us to use them more effectively. And as you know, there are 5 or 10 drugs that are very promising And I'm sure that in the next 5 years, we'll have more drugs added in lupus.
Professor Bumpas, Dr. Fanouriakis, thank you very much for your time and contribution to this podcast series, providing further insights on the modern management of systemic lupus erythematosus. And thank you all for joining us in this Annals of the Rheumatic Diseases podcast. If you'd like to read the full text article, please visit the website ard.bmj.com. You can subscribe to our podcast on your preferred platform, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. If you enjoy the show, please leave us a rating and a review on the ARD podcast page on iTunes. You can find a link to it in the description of this podcast. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for upcoming podcasts by our team.